In 1960, Tolkien undertook a revision of The Hobbit that would have brought it into greater harmony with Lord of the Rings, both in style and detail. However, the revision only got so far before Tolkien moved on to other things. On this episode, we'll look at the significant revisions Tolkien made to The Hobbit Chapter 2, as well as the direction he hoped to go with the rest of the book. The Tolkien Road, Episode 194, The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters, Part 3, The Broken Bridge. Hello everyone, welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 194, The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters, Part 3, The Broken Bridge. Greta?
Hey.
What's new?
You know, not a whole lot.
No.
Not a whole lot since last week. No. Mm-hmm. How about you? What's new with you?
Nothing really. Yeah. Nothing really. Just some hobbits, some chapters from the hobbits.
That's cool.
Just some hobbits from the chapters.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got some new hobbits, you mean?
Some new hobbits from the chapters. Yeah. That's what I almost said.
Oh.
So.
Gotcha.
Some new stuff from the Hobbit that I've been digesting so that we can talk about it to you guys, the listeners.
Rock on.
So, special thanks to our patrons, especially our newest patron, Monique S.
Monique, thank you.
Thank you for your pledge, Monique. You can become a patron as well. Don't forget to head on over to patreon.com and pledge $1 or more per episode. Head on over there, patreon.com/Tolkien Road, to find out all the deets.
Deets.
The deets. And then rate us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star rating and say some nice things about us. As we've started doing, one piece of correspondence and responding to it every week, but we're also going to read one of the reviews that we get every week.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's the plan. So
sounds good. So we need people to leave us reviews.
Yeah.
So we have reviews to read.
Just, you know, it's if you go and leave us a review and say really cool or awesome things about us, then you might get read on the air.
Right on.
Right on.
Okay. I can dig that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we'd love to hear from you otherwise. Of course, for that correspondence, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to TolkienRoad.com and then use the contact form. Heck, even if you want to do Facebook or Twitter and you say something cool and we're like, that's cool, we want to read it on air, maybe we'll do it that way. So any way that works for you. Any way that works for you.
Lots of options.
Just, you know, we want to hear from you. So
right,
love hearing from you guys.
Indeed.
All right. Yeah, SpeakPipe. Nobody's really using SpeakPipe these days.
Oh well.
Bummer.
That is a
bummer. I like hearing people's voices, but
I do too. But I understand.
Yeah.
Like, it's putting yourself out there a little bit more, I think, to actually speak.
I wonder how many people have gone and done one and then be like, oh, I sound like a dork.
I know. I would totally do that. Totally do that.
I know the feeling because I, when before I started doing podcasting a lot and you know, just hearing my recorded voice a lot in various formats, I used to be like, oh, I sound like such a dork.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't realize that's just how you sound to everybody.
Right.
And you get
used
to it real quick, and you don't sound as bad as you think you do. You probably just have an exalted view of how you actually sound in real life. So,
that's probably
but for
true.
Some people, they just don't want to, you know, they don't want to realize that. But
that's fine.
No, that's fine.
It's fine. You just the other day, you played a clip of our podcast at the dinner table for the kids to hear, and I was like, oh, I do not like the way I sound.
Oh,
so
that,
I get it.
Was that the one where you cussed?
Oh, I shouldn't have brought that up.
Yeah. Good thing I bleeped that out for all the kiddos listening.
I think you did a little more than a bleep.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'd have a little fun with it.
That's fine.
All right. So
I'll try to behave myself today.
You better.
Okay.
You might get fired. So.
I saw a t-shirt. I don't know, like, what, you know, I guess Google, like, I don't know how they know the kind of stuff you're going to be into because they're spying on us, I guess. But anyway, I had like this ad pop up for a t-shirt and it said, good moms say bad words.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, has someone been listening in on my speak lately?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that might be an appropriate one for you. I might have to look that up.
I don't know if it's something I should be happy about or not. Probably not.
Well,
it's like the other one. I love Jesus, but I cuss sometimes.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, both statements are true of you. You love Jesus and you're a good mom. So
I say bad words and I cuss sometimes. You say bad words
sometimes. Yeah. So. All right. Okay. So.
Enough of that.
My new video series is now completely on YouTube. It's an 8-part guide to the Silmarillion. Head on over there, check it out, subscribe to our channel over there. Lots more to come in terms of videos. These videos feature some beautiful artwork from a number of different artists, and I hope that if you see something in those videos that you think is really cool, you'll head on over there and see about supporting those artists, maybe getting a print of one of the things they've created, because there's so much cool stuff out there. And if you're like me, you really love seeing Tolkien's works come to life in that way. And you love seeing different takes on it too, like not just one particular perspective, but there's so many different artists with incredible talents who bring different perspectives to Tolkien's world, and it's always fascinating to me to see what they do, right?
Yeah,
the things they create.
I know, it's really
I've
awesome.
Seen many things where it's like, you know, I never thought of it before mm-hmm. in that way, but that really seems to work.
Yeah, you know? Just how different people interpret, you know, interpret different.
Well, there's all kinds of cool stuff about, like, and, you know, Ainu Lindele and and early stories from the Silmarillion. You know, you'll just see all these different episodes that that you've pictured in your mind's eye, and it's just neat to see how other people bring them to life.
Yes, so absolutely.
And then, so check out those videos, and then just to bring you guys up to speed on the current plan for the next episodes, this will be the last one we do on the lost chapters from the history of the Hobbit. But we are planning to do spend a lot more time in the Third Age in the not-too-distant future. But for next episode, my plan is actually to do kind of a more open-ended discussion episode, and what I want to talk about is the future of Tolkien's Legendarium. Because I'm really fascinated by this question, because just a few years ago, we did maybe a couple of episodes on this topic, and it, in fact, I think we may have been doing one when the news of the Amazon deal had broke, right? And it was just like, mm-hmm. whoa, you know, it was like yeah. the most biggest news and, you know, probably the biggest news in the history of Tolkien since like the publication of the Silmarillion, or maybe even since, you know, the death of Tolkien himself, but, or maybe the, you know, when they decided to make the Lord of the Rings movies. But in my mind, like we're with, first of all, with that deal, and then second of all, with the death of Christopher earlier this year, God rest his soul. I think it's a really interesting time to be a Tolkien fan and to ponder what the future might hold, not just in terms of the Amazon TV show, but also in terms of, is there some possible future to go, you know, like to actually explore more episodes from different time periods in the history, right? I mean, there's still the whole question of like the Silmarillion, right? Like, mm-hmm. will mm-hmm. that ever be made into any kind of a TV show or a movie, right? Or, you know, a series of movies? Will, you know, but there's 3,000 years of history in the Third Age. Like, we know that the Amazon show is going to focus on the Second Age, but there's 3,000 years of history there. And then you got 3,000 years of history from the Third Age, right? That take place before The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a couple of decades of story between the end of The Hobbit and the start of The Lord of the Rings, where Bilbo is apparently going on all kinds of cool adventures.
Yeah,
there's just so much. And so I want to explore a lot of those possibilities and talk about what that future could hold. And because I think it's a really exciting topic, and I think it's also one where people are going to have pretty starkly different views. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be a fun one to go into.
Oh, that does sound fun.
So
count me in.
Right on.
Okay.
All right. So let's see. Let's dive on into this last part of The Hobbit, The Broken Bridge, as I'm calling it. So, and this is I thought this was a good title for the episode, not just because it's the reworked title of Chapter 2 of The Hobbit, but also because this is kind of where it seems to have all fallen apart for Tolkien, right? He got through a significant revision for Chapter 2, got started a little bit of a revision of Chapter 3, and then it just kind of trailed off from there, right? And he never really came back to it in a meaningful way. So, but there's a lot. This is, and honestly, Chapter 2 is the most interesting section of what we have here, right? What he did leave to us. So that's where we're going to start. So if you need background on what this is, you know, you can go back to the episode 192 where we gave the background on what we're talking about here. But essentially, in 1960, Tolkien sat down, said, I'm going to rewrite The Hobbit in a style that's more in line with The Lord of the Rings. And I'm also going to correct a lot of the details that I noticed that seemed to be off. And so that's what he did. He got through a revision of chapter one and a revision of chapter two. And last time on episode 183, we talked about chapter one. And then now we're going to talk about chapter two and the little bit of chapter three that he gave us and some of the other odds and ends that were included in this package. So I'm not going to be hitting every change, as I said last time, right? There's just too much fine print kind of detail on a lot of these things. You know, I'm not going to call it every time he changes a, an indefinite article to a definite article or something like that, but I'm going to try and hit the salient points, right? Like, I'm going to try and hit the things that are like, oh, that's cool. And this really contains the coolest thing, which is this whole new episode. I mean, it's really an episode in chapter two, right? Everybody thinks of chapter two as the troll mm-hmm. chapter, and yep. it still is here.
Okay.
That's definitely still the most significant thing that happens in the chapter. But even before now, he's inserted this whole episode of the broken bridge before we even get to the trolls.
Okay.
So that's what's really cool about this. So the first thing, of course, with this chapter two revision is that the title changes from Roast Mutton to the Broken Bridge. Roast Mutton to the Broken Bridge. So, again, I think, Greta, we talked, one of the themes we've seen arising from these changes is that he's trying to take the tone in a more mature level.
Right. Less whimsical.
Yes.
Less fairy tale-ish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Less whimsical, less fairy, or maybe, I think if we had him here, don't you think he might have said not so much? Because for him, fairy tale means something different than what it means to most people.
True,
right?
true.
We think of fairy tale and we think like children's Cinderella. Story. Like nursery story,
uh-huh.
right? But Tolkien in On Fairy Stories talks about that's not what he means.
Right.
Yes. Right? And he's that's not what he thinks it meant traditionally, right? Going way back in history. But the fairy is actually the realm, is like the perilous realm, right? So he's actually trying to make this less of a nursery story.
And more right? of a fairy tale.
Exactly.
The way he sees fairy tales.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So we get this change in the title, Roast Mutton, and now it's The Broken Bridge, which again, it just feels, it's like more sober, like Roast Mutton, even like knowing what you know about the old chapter two, that the chapter two that we, you know, really stands, you know, Roast Mutton is kind of a, it's kind of a humorous title for this,
yes,
you know, for this chapter, right?
Right.
Because the whole thing is that the trolls are annoyed because all they have to eat is roast mutton,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
And they'd love some man flesh to eat, right? And it all kind of plays off of their, like, that these trolls are these, after you read Lord of the Rings, these trolls seem very out of place. I mean, even down to the point of, like, their names, right?
Oh, yeah, like Bill,
Tom, and Bert.
That's right, right? Yeah.
It's almost like these, I think it's like kind of a Cockney kind of thing. Like, you know, they've got kind of this, that you can just see them like kind of talking in this very, like, you know, like the chimney sweep from Mary Poppins.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
You know, that it's, you know, that they're these like funny characters, even though they're bad guys, they're really nasty creatures, right? They're still kind of, they got these funny personalities, right? And they got these silly, you know, like one syllable names. And it, you know, that's very disarming in the way that you feel like you tell a fairy tale to a child, right? Where you, it's like, it's scary, but you want to throw in some funny things so that they're not as frightened of it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. You need that balance.
So even just the title to me reflects that, right? Mm-hmm. The change in title, much like the change in title in chapter one reflected that. You've got Roast Mutton, which is kind of that, it suggests a playfulness. And then you've got the Broken Bridge, which is, again, is a very more, very like matter of fact, right? You know, we've come mm-hmm. to this Broken Bridge.
Right.
The Broken Bridge actually, though, is a very appropriate title for the chapter because it turns out that this Broken Bridge that we're going to learn about actually has to do with the trolls, right?
Oh.
It actually has to do with the trolls.
Hmm.
So it really does maybe tie the chapter together pretty well. All right. So the first, after the change in title, the first thing we're going to notice is that Gandalf has a horse, and although he had a horse in the first one, this horse actually has a name now. And the horse that he has a special horse, without a doubt, right? We find out very early it's a special horse. So the horse's name is Rohald, right? Rohald.
Oh.
And that's so as far as what that name means, of course, you know, when you think of Rohald, what do you think of in Lord of the Rings?
Rohan.
Rohan, of course.
Yeah.
And you know why?
Because they love horses.
Because they love horses. And, so the whole thing is that the roh element means horse, right? The name is clearly Sindarin. This is according to Ratliff's footnote. The name is clearly Sindarin with the roh element meaning horse, compared with Aragorn's horse, Roharen, which means horse of the lady, and Rohal, or High King Fingolfin's great horse. Hmm. So, you know, and then we know, of course, Rohan were the horse-loving people.
Right.
So, and then the last part of the name, Hald, which we don't clearly know what the Sindarin meaning of that might be, but he suggests that it is related to Hall, which might mean either exalted or high, or veiled, hidden, shadowed, shady. So this is either Gandalf's high horse.
Literally.
Or his shady horse. One of those two.
Let's go with high horse.
You want to go with high horse?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. Shady just doesn't seem to go with Gandalf.
I'm not okay with most people having a high horse, but I'm okay with Gandalf having a high horse.
If anyone deserves a high horse, it's Gandalf.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yes. So we're going to find out a little bit more detail on how exactly Roald is a special horse as we go on in the chapter. From there, we get to this big significant change in the chapter, which is the episode of the Broken Bridge. So roast mutton begins with, in the version we all know and love, begins with Bilbo, you know, finding the note from the dwarves, realizing he's about to be left behind, running out the door to catch up with them. It's all very comical, and he finally does catch up with them, and then Gandalf catches up with the group, and they're off on their journey, and it's kind of very slow going as they leave Hobbiton and then they leave the Shire, and not much happens until we get to the trolls. With this, we get a lot more detail about what happened, and it's not that all these exciting things necessarily happen, like it's not like 15 new exciting things, but we get more detail about the landscape that really serves to make clear that this is the same landscape that Frodo and company journey through in Fellowship of the Ring, right? As they're on their own journey to Rivendell.
Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
So we've got this Broken Bridge episode, and I'll just read a little bit. So we've got, this is from the new version, before they get to the Broken Bridge. In a day or two, they came to Brion the Hill. There they spent their last comfortable night for many a day to come in the great Inn of Bree, the prancing pony, well known to the hobbits of the east side of the Shire. Bree was as far as Bilbo's knowledge reached, even by hearsay. Beyond it, the lands had been desolate for many long years. When in a day's journey more they came to the last end, they found it forsaken. They camped in its ruins, and next day they passed into a barren country with great marshes on their left as far as eye could see. They went very slowly now, sparing their laden ponies and often trudging on foot, for the road became very bad, rutted and pitted, and in places almost lost in a soft bog. The weather remained dry, as far as Bree, it had been as fair as may can be, even in legends, but it was gray now and rather sad. So, you know, we get a lot of notes of Bree in the story now. We find out that they pass a lot of, so sometimes you get this impression of this road, this east-west road between the Shire and Rivendell,
mm-hmm.
that like nobody ever travels on it.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually talk about how they pass a bunch of, you know, they pass dwarves and they pass men and they pass farmers and hobbits and all these other sorts of people on the road, right, as they're traveling. So this is apparently a pretty well-traveled road.
Okay.
So that's another interesting note that just fills out the detail a little bit and brings the wider context of this story to bear.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
and then finally we get to, you know, after a good couple of days journey, they do finally get to the Broken Bridge. In the old version, it mentions them passing over this bridge. And what this bridge is, if you look at the map in the Fellowship of the Ring, if you go to one of the Eriador map, then you'll see this last bridge that's mentioned there, right to the west of the Trollshaws.
Mm-hmm.
That this is the bridge they're referring to.
Okay.
And it goes over the river Mithiathel, which is the Grey Flood or the Horwell, right? It's actually, it's a little confusing because he refers to it in the text as the Grey Flood, but the Grey Flood is actually the combination of the Mathiothel and then the Bruinen rivers. So, but this is that last bridge that's marked there. And in the original Hobbit, they just pass over it really without incident, right?
But so here, it was not broken.
It was not broken.
Hmm.
Here they come to it and it's broken, right? Hmm. It's like, well, crap. And this is not some kind of like little trickly stream, right? This isn't just a little creek. This is a significant,
like a roaring river.
Yeah, this is a significant river. You know, maybe not the Mississippi, but it's the, you know, it's still enough to drown you, right?
That you can't easily swim across or walk the ponies across or
right. It's like not that. Just something you can kind of walk through, you know, a little trickly stream, right? So they've got to figure out how to get over this bridge, and with, you know, without going into all the detail about what happens, essentially they're all a little scared to do it, and Gandalf, with Gandalf's horse, Rohald, previously mentioned, shows them all how it's done. And it's very interesting.
The horse does.
The horse does, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, so again, this horse is special, right? It's not it's not your you know, it's just not just some random pony from some farm back in the Shire. This is some kind of special horse that we know exists in the world of Tolkien amongst certain peoples. And this horse like shows them how to get across the river. He demonstrates it for all the other horses, and it's really interesting because this serves to characterize all of the horses that are with them and shows that these other horses also sort of look up to Rohald in a special way, that they recognize that he's a special horse.
That's interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
And of course Gandalf is able to talk to him in a certain language that we don't really know what it is, but we can maybe muse that it's some form of Elvish, and then Rohald is able to make it, you know, to kind of carry out whatever Gandalf told him to do, right?
And like Gandalf and the hobbits and the dwarves, they're riding.
Yes.
The ponies and Rohald river. Is that how it works?
We won't go into all the detail of exactly how they make it across. I'd encourage you to like get this and read it for yourself, right? I don't want to steal Ratliff's thunder too much, but Rohald sets the example and shows them all that it can be done.
Gotcha.
It's basically how you want, you know, what you need to know. And so, this is a cool little episode and tells us more about Rohald. And, but again, like there's several pages of this. It's not like this like hugely exciting incident that changes everything or anything like that, but it's just an interesting, another passage that shows what Tolkien was really hoping to do with this revision. That he was looking to, instead of just being like, then they left the Shire, and then they came upon the trolls, and then they got to Rivendell, right? We go to Fellowship of the Ring, and as we know, because we spent, you know, we've been reading it aloud with the kids, like, they're in the Old Forest for three chapters.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the road, you know, they're in Bree for a chapter. They're on the road between Bree and Rivendell for multiple chapters, and you know, it's again this expansive sense that Tolkien really seemed to care about giving to his works, right? He wanted to make the world that they were in feel real, and this serves to do more of that.
So you think that this Broken Bridge episode was mainly for the purpose of expanding the chapter and I guess I'm just wondering, like, if it doesn't really add that much, you know, I guess I'm just wondering, like, what was there more to it than the fact that he just wanted to add stuff?
Well, I think there is.
Okay, good.
So I think there's two reasons. I think first of all, Gandalf's disappearance is explained better now, because even though Gandalf is with them while they're crossing the bridge, when he realizes that the bridge is out, he realizes, oh, we've got a problem. And he actually, and later on we learn this is why he disappears right before they meet the trolls. Because he was, you know, previously it was like, why did he disappear, right? You know, now we realize he rode ahead to Rivendell, and we find this out in Tolkien's revision. He rode ahead to Rivendell to get help.
I see. Okay.
He was like, okay, I need to find out what's going on. I need to get some assistance. Second of all, we learn that it's actually the trolls that took out the bridge.
Hmm.
Right? So the trolls took out the bridge so that people traveling on the road would have to go through the forest, and it would be easier for the trolls to catch them, right? They would have to. So you remember there's that discussion. So there's a discussion in here about, you wouldn't remember this. There's a discussion in here about, they're like, well, we could go north and try to cross the river somewhere further north where there's less, you go towards the what do they call it? Not the mouth of the river. That's the end of it. But the source of the river. As you get further close to the source of the river, it's less deep and it might be easier to cross. So the trolls are maybe thinking, well, if we can get people to go further north and try to cross there, then we can trap them and then we can capture some man flesh, right?
So this bridge being broken out kind of raised two red flags mm-hmm. for them, basically.
Right.
Like it made Gandalf realize that the trolls, wouldn't be just one red flag.
Well, just the red flag it raised was, Gandalf didn't know about the trolls, but he said something was wrong here, right?
How it should be.
He wrote ahead to get help.
Got it.
Right?
Okay.
And
then is it because now that this present, the trolls through this breaking of the bridge, did uh-huh. it kind of make them into more of an enemy that they, were trolls naturally feared? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, did it make the trolls scarier or more of a threat in some way?
I don't know that it made them scarier or more of a threat. I mean, maybe, to show that they were powerful enough to take out this bridge. But nevertheless, it shows that they were, I mean, maybe it indicates that they were a little smarter, right? Than their names would suggest and their other behavior would suggest.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I guess I'm just wondering, what is the significance of the fact that, of us learning that the trolls were the ones that took out the bridge? What's the significance of that?
Oh, it's just, it ties it together, right? I mean, okay. I don't think there needs to be a grand significance to it, right? Okay. I think it is a plot device. And again, you got to be too careful when you're talking about Tolkien and plot devices and thinking that everything has to have some specific plot device. For Tolkien, I think it's an acceptable reason to say, I want to fill out the geography of this place between the Shire and Rivendell, right? Because there's huge several days worth of journeying, and it's through some pretty perilous realms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's enough with Tolkien to say that he just wanted to give more of a geographical excursion, but he does tie it back, right? He does tie it back to some plot points in the process.
I
know that a lot of writers would be like, well, why does that even matter? And everything has to fit into the story somehow in a kind of a play in a way that makes mm-hmm. sense. But I don't think that's always the case for, everything does ultimately fit in somehow, and that's very important to him, but it's not necessarily that we learned that the trolls destroyed the bridge, but that just serves to tell us why the bridge was destroyed. Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And the bridge being destroyed is the reason that Gandalf travels ahead and leaves them alone and then is able to circle back later and find them about to get eaten by the trolls and ensure the trolls get turned into
stone. Just kind of answers some questions.
Yeah.
Maybe fills in some gaps.
Fills in some gaps, but again, geography is good enough for Tolkien, right?
Yeah.
He'll tell a story just to fill out the geography.
That is true.
So he'll add stuff just to fill out the geography. So, which, thank you very much, is one of the reasons I love him.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So,
I know.
Don't judge me.
I'm not judging you.
I'm looking all judgy at me.
I said I know.
All right. So, we get to the trolls. We do finally get to the trolls. And like I said, we learned the trolls knocked out the bridge. A couple of changes here, some minor details, but they're interesting. In the original one, it talks about Bifur and Bomber giving trouble to the trolls before they get caught. And here we get Feely and Keely giving trouble to the trolls,
oh.
right? Hmm. Which I think Tolkien probably would have realized seems a little more appropriate than Bifur and Bomber
mm-hmm.
doing it. That Feely and Keely were kind of the, they were the let me at them kind of dwarves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
they were the young, unrestrained ones.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we have Gandalf's appearance where he, in the original, he says, "Dawn take you all," right? As the sun comes up
mm-hmm.
and he, sun comes down upon the trolls. In the new one, he says, "Dawn strike you all," right? Dawn strike you all.
Interesting.
And then just some little, some of the little asides, like, as you probably know, right? Wink, wink to the kiddos, right? That stuff like that is deleted out of the text. And then we get to the episode of the Troll Cave, and Gandalf gives weapons. So this is interesting. Instead of everybody just kind of finding something in the Troll Cave, Bilbo and Thorin in the original, like, Gandalf, Bilbo, and Thorin all find their weapons and are just like, look, I found a weapon for myself. Interesting. It has some stuff written on it. Well, in this one, Gandalf finds the weapons and then gives them to Bilbo and Thorin instead of them just taking them.
Hmm.
So, but maybe the other thing, in addition to the Broken Bridge episode that's most interesting about this, is that we find out, Bomber joke coming.
Oh boy.
We find out that Bomber slept through the whole troll incident.
He slept through it.
Right. So
wait, wasn't he captured in the first one?
He was captured. It says he was one of the ones that fought them in the old one.
Right.
And then we find out here that after the troll incident, they're all looking for him. So I'm going to read some of this from the new one, or from the revision. These look like good blades too, said the wizard, half drawing the swords and examining them closely. They were not made by any troll, nor by any smith among men of these days. But there's black blood on them, goblin blood. When they are cleaned and the runes on them can be read, we shall know more about them. Now you had better look for Bomber, said Gandalf, and we shall need the ponies if you can find them. Bifur and Bofur went off, and soon came back with the old fat dwarf. He looked rather glum. Not that he minded at all having missed the affair of the sacks, but they had found him fast asleep and no sign of the ponies. Thorin was not pleased. Gandalf laughed. Never mind, he said. Let's have breakfast. You were fools to bring them across the road. I wonder you got them so far. No one could have held them when all the noise started. But they'll be all right. My Roald is looking after them. So they all set to and had a great breakfast, or a feast as it seemed. And after that they slept, even Bomber, for their night had been disturbed. They did not make a move until the afternoon. Then Gandalf got up and went down the hill, and soon he came back leading his white horse and all the ponies coming meekly behind him. Then the dwarves packed up all the food that was left fit to eat and other things that might prove useful, and they carried away the pots of gold. And I'll just kind of let it trail off there, but yeah, we get this, again, another Bomber joke, right? So Tolkien may be done with some of the nursery tale aspects of this, but he's not done with Bomber jokes.
I know, that's kind of funny.
Apparently there's just not enough Bomber jokes in the original. So
I can't disagree with that.
I know.
It
is one of the, I mean, Bomber is a lovable character because of things like this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's something that adults appreciate too.
Absolutely.
Maybe even more so than the kids.
And as long as you give Bomber enough time to actually like show what a, you know, an awesome like warrior he is too, mm-hmm. then it's okay. Right?
It's totally okay.
it all kind of weighs out, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So true. Hopefully he would have gotten his chances to show that he could, you know, kick some goblin, you know what.
Bum.
I won't say the word because
yep.
Yeah.
I won't say it either.
I got in trouble last week.
I did.
All right. So that's chapter that's a lot of the one more thing. We've got also Gandalf gives a longer explanation for where he was towards the end. And as we already talked about, he rode ahead to, because of the bridge being broken, to get help. And of course he rode ahead to Rivendell, and we actually get a mention of rangers in this, right?
Oh.
So the rangers, of course, you know, of whom Strider Aragorn is a ranger, and we get a mention of rangers in the story here, which is an interesting new detail.
They're not named at all. In the original, were they?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that not that I'm aware of. So
just another way of tying it all together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So let's see. We've also got chapter 3. So we do get a revision to the name of chapter 3 from A Short Rest to Arrival in Rivendell, but not much else. Now, of course, you know, again, the chapter revision, I think we're seeing the theme with the chapter revisions, right? I mean, I was never like, A Short Rest is like not that great a name for a chapter anyway.
It's better than Arrival in Rivendell.
But yeah, it's again, Arrival in Rivendell, very matter of fact.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like you're looking at an itinerary.
That's a great point. Yeah. I think you put like, that well.
Saturday, 10 a.m., Arrival in Rivendell.
Right. Well, and it all kind of goes back to that. Here you are on your long expected party, you know, long expected journey, right? Leaving on your long expected journey.
Yeah.
So I can see what he was trying to do here, but yeah, it's maybe, and we can maybe wonder if he was just trying something new and hadn't settled on these as the final names of the new names of the chapters.
Just trying them on for size.
Just trying them on for size, or maybe saying like this is kind of a first draft of this chapter title, because I mean, not all the titles in Fellowship of the Ring are like that. You know, like they're not all matter of fact, and you know, like A Conspiracy Unmasked is, you know, a really good title.
That's
for that chapter,
a really good
right?
title. Yeah.
A Shortcut to Mushrooms, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these are all great. You know. Well, these are well-titled chapters for that book. So he may have come up with something better if he had carried out this revision all the way through. There's not much in as far as chapter 3 in terms of actual substantial revision to the text. There are a few little things here and there. He does make some notes that are interesting to read out. So he says it should make the chapter 3 should make clear Elrond's care for the roads from Grey Flood to the mountain. So that Gandalf, Elrond would have had a responsibility for caring for the bridge. Right.
Oh, okay.
So that Elrond, you know, his dominion as Elrond, as the Lord of Rivendell, extended out from just Rivendell, right? It actually, he had dominion over a lot of the region surrounding Rivendell, all the way at least to the Grey Flood River, where the bridge was out. It would have also gone more into the story of Rohald and how he belonged to Rivendell and had been lent by Elrond to Gandalf, right?
This would have been in chapter 3, you're saying?
Right, exactly. Okay. And that's really important, I think, because in what Ratliff speculates is that the reason Tolkien would have wanted to point that out is because what happens to the ponies in chapter 4 when the others get caught by the orcs in the mountain. Do you remember?
They wander off?
The ponies get taken. We never find out what happens to them. We assume that they get eaten by the orcs, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So the thought would be that would have been a an inappropriate ending for a character like Roald, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
So,
which, yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
The little bit that I know about Roald, it doesn't seem like an orc should be able to eat him.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thought is that we learn more about Roald, and that when they're going up into the mountains, they decide that Elrond's like, you can't take Roald any further than here. So,
gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Now, we don't know if that's what it would have done. That's just Ratliff's speculation.
Okay.
Okay. So there's also some revisions to the time. I mean, there's a lot. Like, what I've been doing here is I've been glossing over for the like cool stuff that stands out, for the really interesting stuff, but there is a lot of detail here. So for those of you who like going into thorough like analysis of the differences, I mean, there's probably stuff I've missed that's really cool. And so if you want to, you know, we're always open, of course, to you writing in. And, you know, if you write in with some cool things that you've noticed that we didn't mention here, or if we got anything wrong, you know, send us a note and we'll make sure to read it on a future episode and go back. So, but there are a lot of revisions to the timeline that he makes. And, so there's no shortage of interesting stuff in all of this. I wanted to read Ratliff's, parting thought, but first I want to actually read this thing from Karen Wynn Fonstad, who of course is the one, she was the one who made the Atlas of Middle-earth, which is that really incredible reference that gives all the different maps. And in the Atlas of Middle-earth, she writes, "The Troll's Fire was so close to the river that it could have been seen some way off, and it probably took the dwarves no more than an hour to reach. Whereas Strider led the hobbits north of the road, where they lost their way and spent almost 6 days reaching the clearing where they found the stone trolls. Lost or not, it seems almost impossible that the time-pressed ranger would have spent 6 days reaching a point the dwarves found in an hour. The two stories seemed irreconcilable." So what she's saying there is that there's a lot of problems in between the two stories as it stands right now. And
when you say the two stories, you original and the revision?
No, it's in between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
I see.
Right, okay. Between the geography. So the point she makes there is that Strider in Lord of the Rings leads them on this really roundabout thing that takes almost 6 days to get around this area. And they come to the stone trolls after 6 days. And here it's like the trolls are just off the beaten path, right? Like they're definitely not 6 days off the beaten path here.
Oh.
She just says that seems irreconcilable in all this. And I read that and I thought that was an interesting quote, because I think it kind of indicates that even though there are, you know, there are definitely discrepancies between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, that any writer who loves his work would have been like, oh, wish I could have that one back, wish I could do that one over, get it right. There's also something to be said of like, don't mess with the space-time continuum, right? Like, mm-hmm. as I heard a musician say one time when talking about going back and revisiting some of his past work, there's problems with going back and messing up the space-time continuum. That, of course, is a reference to Back to the Future, yes. Where there's all these problems that are caused when you go back and you try to change even the smallest detail mm-hmm. from the past. I think there's some wisdom in what Sam says and what Sam might say, right? Which is, this sounds at least very Sam Wiseian to me. What's done is done, right? Yeah. That sounds like some Sam wisdom.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably right. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, how delicious would this have been, right? To have this whole thing.
To have the whole thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I think there could have been some really cool stuff. The only thing is that it wouldn't have solved all the problems. It would have solved some problems and then created a bunch more in the end. Right. Mm-hmm. It would have solved some problems, but then created a bunch more in the end.
Yes, that's true.
So here's Ratliff's parting thought on all this. We cannot know what else Tolkien would have added to the story had the 1960 Hobbit or Fifth Phase continued beyond this point. Bilbo could not have met Arwen at Rivendell, for we know she was at that time in the middle of a decades-long visit to her grandparents, Galadriel and Celeborn and Lorien. But did Bilbo's lifelong friendship with Aragorn, then a 10-year-old living in Rivendell with his mother and being raised by Elrond, begin during his visit there, either on the outgoing or the return trip? Did Legolas Greenleaf fight in the Battle of Five Armies? I mean, hasn't this guy seen Peter Jackson's movies? Come on. Would more light have been cast upon the storm giants of the Misty Mountains or the source of Beorn's enchantment? Or would we have learned a little more about the elusive Radagast? Would the spiders of Mirkwood have been made more horrific, a la Shelob, and the wood elves absolved of all blame in their treatment of the dwarves? Would Balin's visit in the epilogue include some mention of his plans for Moria? And most importantly, would the ring have been presented in more sinister terms throughout, with hints of its corruptive influence even on one such as Bilbo? We will never know the answers to any of these questions. According to Christopher Tolkien, when his father had reached this point in the recasting, he loaned the material to a friend to get an outside opinion on it. We do not know this person's identity, but apparently her response was something along the lines of, "This is wonderful, but it's not The Hobbit." Hmm. She must have been someone whose judgment Tolkien respected, for he abandoned the work and decided to let The Hobbit retain its own autonomy and voice rather than completely incorporate it into The Lord of the Rings as a lesser prelude to the greater work. When he briefly returned to it in 1965 for the third edition revisions, he restricted himself in the main to the correction of errors and egregious departures from Middle-earth as it had developed, and left matters of style and tone alone. Thus the work, begun in a flash of inspiration 35 years before, in a hole in the ground that lived a hobbit, saw periodic revisioning throughout several different distinct phases over a period of 35 years, until in the last decade of its author's life it reached the final form we know and love today. So...
that's really interesting.
Yeah. So that is the story of The Hobbit, The Lost Chapters. So
very cool.
Do yourself a favor and go pick up Ratliff's book. It's available on Kindle. That's what I've been using. I think you can pay more and get like kind of a bigger, cool binding of it. And it's got, I mean, this is just we've just been going over a small section of that book. If you're into the history of these texts, then you really should own of Tolkien's works. You really should own, this book. So.
Right on.
All right. Any questions, Greta?
No. All right. That was very enlightening.
All right. Well, let's get to some correspondence, shall we?
Yes. Let's do that.
All right. First off, we'll go with our iTunes review of the week.
Okay.
Let's see here. Let me pull it up. So this is from a few weeks back. They said, already one of my favorite podcasts. I found this podcast 2 weeks ago after I began rereading The Silmarillion and wanted to nerd out even more. I can't stop listening, at least 30 episodes deep now after starting at the beginning. John and Greta are fantastic. Well, thank you very much. I love hearing their thoughts on Tolkien's work, the author himself, and their haiku. I especially appreciate when the hosts talk about how they take the themes and messages of Tolkien's works to heart and in their personal life. If you're a Tolkien fan, you need to give this podcast a try.
Oh, that's very nice.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for that awesome review and your kind words. And we're pleased that you're so pleased with
the
podcast.
We aim to please. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Very cool.
And then our letter of the week is from Marilyn the librarian.
Marilyn.
And she had a really cool insight into what we've been going over with the history of the Hobbit.
Oh, nice.
So make sure I find the right one here. Marilyn, you send us so much correspondence and we're so slow to respond. But this is our most recent one, so I feel pretty good about this. All right. She says, "Hello, Carswells. I'm enjoying your review of the 1960 Hobbit. I only recently discovered and read Ratliff's History of the Hobbit, so it's good to hear about it again so soon. I was struck by your comment that Bilbo appears somewhat childlike despite his years in both versions of the Hobbit. And suddenly I was thinking of a line from The Quest of Erebor, which you also reviewed not too long ago, from Thorin. Thorin was contemptuous and suspicious. 'He is soft,' he snorted. 'Soft as the mud of his shire and silly. His mother died too soon.' I have always been surprised by that last comment. Why on earth did Thorin think that of Bilbo? What's the possible connection? But it came to me as I heard your remarks on Bilbo that this seeming childishness could be what Thorin was reacting to, because I remember that Tolkien's mother also died too soon. Suddenly I was picturing a young lieutenant facing trench warfare, a venture wholly unlike anything in his experience. Did Tolkien think he himself was soft and silly? That he had never really grown up after his mother's death and before that enormous, wrenching event of mass violence which shaped all the rest of his life? And what difference might it have made if Mabel had not died? Why did Thorin value the presence of mothers in the lives of their sons so highly with regard to their maturing? I'm just beginning to turn these questions over in my mind. I'd love to hear your thoughts." That's
amazing.
That's a really great insight.
Really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I knew. You know, both of us grew up with both of our parents.
Yeah, thankfully.
Thankfully, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, you know, I think it's hard for either one of us to imagine, fathom what that, you know, what it would mean to not lose not just one of your parents, but both of your parents before you're an adult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, your thoughts sound right on. The one thing I would say is that Tolkien never seemed to like the idea of like equating of making anything that he wrote autobiographical. The only thing that may be an exception would be Leif by Niggle, but at the same time, I think that if the shoe fits, wear it, right? Like if we, you know, there seems to be a parallel there. I think you've made a pretty good case that there's probably some kind of parallel there, and we all know that a writer's own psyche can't help but slip into the things that they write.
Right. That's what they know.
Right. You do. You write what you know. Even if you're writing about some world that doesn't even exist, except for your imagination, you write about what you know. Right. And you write from your own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty fascinating insight. And I wouldn't be surprised to learn that it was true.
That's interesting. I remember this quote that she's quoting from The Quest of Erebor, and I remember thinking it odd at the time, like, what does Bilbo's mother have to do with any of this? But I didn't honestly make the connection between maybe Thorin here, maybe even Tolkien through Thorin, is making that connection between how vital a mother's presence is to shaping their sons,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because you always think of, oh, it's the dads that make the boys tough,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, moms are there to love on them and, you know, cuddle them and, you know, be sweet to them, soften up the blows from, you know, not the blows, but, you know, kind of balance out the more tough love aspect of dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
that Thorin here would be saying, oh, Bilbo's soft because his mom died too soon. She wasn't around long enough to make a man of him.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, and of course, his mother was the one who was the Took, right? And
that's true.
And we know from A Quest of Erebor that that Thorin, like Gandalf name dropped the Took family,
right,
with
to help Thorin kinda,
to kind of say, like, yeah, look, he's a Took, even though his last name is Baggins, he's actually descended from the Tooks, so
right,
you know, he's got that part of him in him,
right?
And so maybe it is the mother, maybe it's this you know, the fact that it's the Took side of the family, it could be a combination of both, right? You know, I think in the end, of course, I'm speaking to dad, so I may be a little biased, but I think both parents have a significant role.
Well, they both
role,
have
think,
a significant role,
role to play in the, you know, the development of a child, right? But so I can see it being both the Took part, that's the Took side, you know, Took side of the family that Thorne's maybe making reference to here. And of course, in Tolkien's case, like, his mother was all he had when she died.
Right, his dad died. Was he, how old was he when
he actually had, he actually had a father figure at that time, because he had Father Francis, right?
Right. So how old was Tolkien when his dad died? Do you know?
He was, he barely knew his father.
Okay, so right? He wouldn't even have really known. So yeah. This makes more sense. If we're going to make that connection between, you know, Tolkien's life and this comment, it would make more sense, yeah, because he knew his mother much better than he knew his dad.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question to... It's an interesting question to ponder. My gut would say that it ties back to the Took factor, right? With his mother's side of the family, you know, because his father was a Baggins and, you know, is kind of the softer side of the family. So maybe once his mother was gone, right? You know, the Baggins side it asserted itself somewhat, right? And yeah. He became a little softer and all that sort of thing. So, I don't know. Marilyn, let us know what you think. It's absolutely a very interesting question, and you know, it'd be great if we had Tolkien here to be able to give us his own thoughts.
I know, right? That's a very cool insight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure anybody who was not a professional already, who was a more, you know, even though I don't think he was conscripted in the, you know, in the strict sense, I think most of the people who fought in the war were conscripted in the sense that they volunteered out of a strong sense of duty to their country, right? In the time of war.
Right.
And you didn't want to be left out of that if you were going to be part of normal society. So, I would imagine that Tolkien found himself in war and he probably had heard some about like how ugly it is and everything. And then he gets into it and it's just like, you have no idea. Because, I mean, who of us that have never been in something like that could imagine the kind
imagine.
Of horrors that he witnessed on a daily basis, right? So, anyway.
Yeah.
Fascinating question.
Absolutely.
Great letter, Marilyn.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. You, too, can be heard on the podcast. Send us correspondence, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, or go to the website. Leave comments and notes, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is you want to do. And we would love to hear from you. All right. Well, as I said, on the next episode, we're going to have that open-ended discussion about the future of Tolkien's Legendarium, and I am very excited for that. So I hope you'll tune in.
Yeah.
All right. Special thanks to our patrons, all of our patrons, especially those who contribute $5 or more. Eric B.
Daniel P.
David B.
Chuck F.
Ish of the Hammer.
Chris L.
James L.
Zeke F.
James A.
Emilio P.
Shannon S.
Teresa C.
Asia V.
Brian O.
Thanks, you all.
Yes, thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you, and we appreciate all of our listeners, and we will talk at you next time.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.